Hi, I'm Mel Majoros. I am a 2-year cancer survivor. My blog, The Cancer Warrior, is one of the top 10 breast cancer blogs, according to blogs.com. I'm here to bring a fresh, upbeat perspective to a topic that to some may seem scary. A positive mental attitude got me through my cancer, and I hope to share that with you.
How would you react if in your teens, everything you dreamt of doing was gone? That's what happened to Christine Miserandino. She was diagnosed with lupus when she was 16, and she was training to be a dancer. She had to give up that dream, but found a new cause, championing lupus awareness. She has a great website, butyoudon'tlooksick.com, and we talk with her today.
How are you today, Christine?
I'm doing okay. Doing okay today.
Excellent. So tell me a little bit about yourself, how you found out you had lupus and why you started your website.
Well, I was diagnosed at 16, between 15 and 16, with lupus. I went to high school in New York City, and I actually went to the High School of Performing Arts, the fame school, so to speak. And I just kept getting hurt, and I kept getting black and blues, and then I started getting very tired and a lot of these types of symptoms. Mm-hmm. And finally, after numerous doctors and numerous misdiagnoses, me and my mother flew to the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, and we finally got a lupus diagnosis there.
So can you explain to me what lupus is? For people who don't know, because I'm not really sure.
Sure. There are numerous great medical explanations, but the easy explanation that I try to give people,
yes, please.
Please do, is that in lupus, it's an autoimmune disorder where my body attacks itself as if itself is foreign.
Right.
So it can attack any organ. It can attack any part of the body. I personally have had some organ involvement. I've had bone and muscle, the aches, the pains, and I've also had, unfortunately, CNS involvement, so that's central nervous system. But it really, there's such a wide span of ways that it can manifest, which, you know, I've met people who've had lupus, let's say joints and pain in that way, but then I've met people who've had autoimmune hearing loss.
Oh, wow.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, there's so many faces of lupus, and it's kind of interesting that way, but that's why it's also hard to treat and diagnose.
And you said, like, the body attacks itself. It's very similar to cancer that way.
Exactly. And unfortunately, a lot of the treatments are very harsh on the body, you know, in the same way that sometimes dealing with the side effects of the medications are almost worse than the disease itself at times.
Well, let's get back to you were, I don't want to jump ahead because I know that's an interesting story to you. You were in school and you went to the Mayo Clinic and you were diagnosed.
And what's funny about that story is at the time, here I am 16 and I'm dancing and I'm thinking this will be my professional career. And, you know, the man says, the doctor says, not only do you have lupus, but you need to stop dancing. And my entire world
crumbled
in that moment. And I cried and I freaked out as any kid would. I had to change high schools, you know, in the middle of junior year and all this types of things. And at the time, what's weird, because now I'm 32, so you have to realize this is almost 17 years ago, the world of lupus was different. And and they did not know how to diagnose children as they do now. They didn't want to give a child certain medications that now they know how to do in certain dosing, and the way they go about it is different. So, I mean, I even had doctors at the time say to me that I had a pre-lupus condition. So I laugh now saying, was I half pregnant? How does that work?
Right. Well, wouldn't everyone have a pre-lupus condition? Because everyone could have a pre-something. I mean, you may get it.
Exactly. It totally didn't make sense. But I think they were afraid to diagnose you with something that you would have the rest of your life at 16.
Right.
So at the time, you know, people thankfully are getting diagnosed quicker and easier.
Yes.
And the world of pediatric rheumatology is much better than it was years ago. So that's a wonderful thing. But at the time where I got diagnosed, I feel slightly like the guinea pig, you know,
right. So now
for the future.
A rheumatologist
Is it a rheumatologist and an endocrinologist deal with you, or just mostly a rheumatologist, which mostly deals with arthritis?
I would say mostly a rheumatologist are the types of doctors that focus on lupus. But just like in cancer, you go to, you know, you might go to an oncologist, but you also need to go to the doctor who specializes in where it's attacking. So for me, I go to a rheumatologist, but I also need to see a neurologist because it's affecting my nervous system.
Oh, okay.
See what I'm saying? You know,
yes.
So I know a lot of people then have to go to a doctor for their kidneys or, you know, for their lungs or whatever it might be attacking at the time. No, I was diagnosed at 16, and at that time, although it was pretty life-altering, I was able to live mostly a regular life. I did have to wear knee braces at the time, and there were times I had to walk with a cane, which was quite unusual to go to Sweet 16s with a cane.
Right.
Was not the fashion statement I was looking for.
No.
It was relatively okay. I had most of my severe lupus when I started to get into college. And
Well, what did you decide to do when you found out your dancing career was over, unfortunately? Did you have some kind of plan of what else to do?
No plan. I was 16.
That's
there was no plan.
All I
knew is that I didn't have what I wanted.
Right.
You know, I didn't know what I wanted. I just knew what I didn't have.
Right.
And that's really hard because I think that any time you're diagnosed young, whether it's in your teens, your 20s, it does change your life. But you're not given a textbook. You're not saying, like, well, choice A was bad, so here's choice B.
Exactly.
You're not given that. And you have to find that for yourself.
And I would
really say that I floated for a while. I really lost myself when I was diagnosed.
I believe that.
I really did. And it was very hard for me to kind of find myself again.
And I think a lot of people, especially, you know, since I am more of the cancer side, feel that way as well because it's so overwhelming. Even if you're, and as an adult, you feel like, oh my gosh, well, I can't. Sometimes, like you said, your nervous system, and with cancer survivors, it's the white blood cell counts. Well, you can't be around the people, so you may not be able to do the job that you did before.
Right.
And that some people are define themselves by their jobs, and that might make you feel lost as well.
Exactly. I mean, I used to have a joke that I said, you know, most people go to a party, and when you meet someone, what do you say? Usually, your second or third question is, so what do you do?
Right.
Because that's how people define themselves. And, you know, what was I going to say? I'm a professional patient. You know, I go to the doctor. Let's think about this. I go to the doctor at least once a week. I get my blood taken. I have to take certain medications and be conscious of that. So I laughed one time and I said, okay, I spend a few hours a day being healthy, so I'm a professional patient.
Right.
You know, because how you do lose that. And I had a very hard time being in social situations almost because of that reason.
Right.
You know, what do I say? And that was a hard thing for a while until I started to joke about it or until I started to say, you know, I joked one time and said, oh, I'm retired.
Right.
You know, and trying to find some humor in the situation at least broke the ice. And then once the ice was broken, I could say, well, right now I'm dealing with a very bad lupus flare.
Right.
And once you said that and you kind of get past it, that helped a lot. But I did go to college, and I did, what happened was I kind of tried to use my creativity from dance in a different aspect. And for a short time, I even was working in the theater department, and I was, you know, dealing with stage management and kind of trying to use my knowledge without using my body.
But that must have been very hard because when I was diagnosed, they told me I couldn't play hockey while I was being treated, obviously.
Right.
And I tried hanging out at the rink a couple times watching my team, and it was just painful for me to watch everyone out there doing what I love to do, knowing that I couldn't do it. So I was just like, yeah, I can't deal with this anymore.
It was hard. You know, it was weird. It was horrible, but yet I still wanted to be involved.
And, right, okay.
And the other thing was I didn't know anything else.
That's true.
So it was very interesting because once I started to try new things, I actually started to pull away from the theater department. And I think it was because I really did that because I didn't know anything else. And once I started to find other things that made me happy, then all of a sudden I started to do those things.
Right.
But I do have a very strong memory of I went to visit my Aunt Mary Ann. She lives in Philadelphia, and she was doing her, one of her rooms has like a piano and a mm-hmm. lot of music stuff and a lot of art stuff, and she's, her and her husband are very musically inclined, and this actually is my aunt who was dealing with ovarian cancer, which is kind of ironic right now that I'm on this radio, so... She asked me, oh, can I have one of your ballet shoes, one of your point shoes? And I remember giving it to her because I just didn't want it around.
Right.
And what was weird is I said, if I have it, I'm going to throw them out, which now I look back and regret because I threw out every other pair.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. I have no point shoes to show of that time in my life, which was a long time. But she wanted a pair to hang up. And what's funny is a little part of me, even now, knows that they exist.
Right.
Almost like she's the keeper of my history.
Yes, and
these hanging up on her, you know, by her stairs, when I go visit her, it's like that's I feel like there's a huge chunk of me mm-hmm. that are in those point shoes.
And I think a lot of people feel that. Like, for example, the day I was diagnosed here at the station that I work at, we do a lot of sports games. And one of the games that we do is Red Wings hockey. Well, the day I was diagnosed was the last day of Red Wings training camp. And I think during the process of cleaning the house or anything, I threw away the press badge that I had from that day, from that weekend. And I regret that now.
Right.
You know, because that was kind of like, okay, well, this is what you were doing and where you were at. I mean, you know, I know
exactly
what you're saying as far as, and I'm sure a lot of people do that. The day they were diagnosed, they remember what they were wearing. And, you know, sometimes even maybe they can't wear, you know, whatever shirt they were wearing or a picture they saw they had to put away.
I mean, that also happened very recently. You know, you look back and you did things in the past, but sometimes you do them recently. You don't learn from that experience.
Right.
I laughed because someone said to me, oh, do you have any pictures of you when you're in the hospital? And I said, oh, no. And they said,
yeah.
Well,
mm-hmm.
well, why not? And I said, well, I looked horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And what's funny is, yeah, I looked horrible, but you know what? My daughter was visiting me in the hospital every day, and this is the past 6 months I went through treatments, and, you know, that's a valid part of my life. And,
right.
you know, I actually am recently writing a story that's not done yet for my site, but it was titled, you know, the Year That Never Was, because I have photo albums, and then it skips. And it was as if nothing happened this year, you know, and then all of a sudden I'm taking pictures again.
Right. I don't have any pictures of me without any hair. I have pictures of me. I didn't wear a wig. I wore like a ball cap and a bandana.
Gotcha.
But I would not have any pictures of me, you know, bald or anything. And I see all these people on Facebook and, you know, at the hospital when I go for checkups and whatnot. And I feel that they're so much braver than I am.
Right.
That, you know, because I'm like, I don't want anyone to see me bald. Are you crazy?
Yeah.
And there's no picture. Know, there's no picture proof that I was ever bald either.
Exactly. And I said that to myself. I said, wow, you know, I don't have that. And not that I'm going to, you know, put it on a billboard.
Right.
But I also think that everything is your history. It's your story.
Right.
You know, for good or for bad, it makes you who you are. And, you know, I think that sometimes even if you snap a quick picture and you hide it, it's still a part of who you are.
Right.
And, you know, that's so easy to lose. And even going back to, like, when I was in college, I found that I started to get into writing, and it kind of, I fell into it. One of my teachers said that we had to keep a journal.
Oh.
And I laugh because this brings to where we are today. Like, this one little assignment of keeping a journal, and every day she'd give us, like, a writing prompt, you know.
Oh, good. Yeah, because I would be like, I don't know what the hell I'm going to write about it.
Exactly, me too. Really. And I was never a writer.
Mm-hmm.
I would not even ever consider myself a writer. I wasn't even a good reader. I didn't enjoy reading.
Right.
And then what happened was, you know, with this teacher, and one day she said, write a story about an an everyday experience that turned into something, you know, extraordinary.
Right.
An ordinary experience that turned into something extraordinary. And that's when I wrote The Spoon Theory, was in college. And The Spoon Theory is on my site, but youdontlooksick.com. And it's now, it amazes me that that one story not only got me writing, it kind of found a new direction in my life when I started to say, wow, my words can be powerful,
yes,
whether they're written or spoken. I said, wow, I do have this dance and theater history, so I don't mind speaking in front of people. I'm not afraid. I'm not, obviously not shy. So, you know, and I can use this. And it really, it opened up a whole new world for me.
And I
because
think,
I felt like I could speak for those who weren't able to.
And I feel the same way. And I think any kind of, like we were saying, I don't know, if someone who's living with cancer or living with lupus, because we were talking before the show about how you weren't sure if survivor was the right word or even warrior is the correct word. If you're going through this, you need to find something, an outlet, whether it be writing, could be your writing, you could knit, you could watch movies, something that helps you deal with your situation.
Right.
And for me, like you, writing was it. I started writing because it was cathartic. I was writing for a work blog, then I switched over to my own blog, and then, you know, people, you know, I'm always amazed by people go, yeah, I enjoyed your blog, and you know, they're like, wow, it's very inspirational. I just think, well, it's just write about the crap that happened to me. So,
right.
You know,
and it's amazing, too, because when I actually was recently, this is a funny story, that I recently was at an event, a meeting where right. Many of the lupus patients were there. But I was there under my married name, and so no one knew. I almost felt incognito.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And in the middle of the meeting, someone said, oh, sorry, I'm working on, you know, Little Spoons today. And someone else goes, oh, you know that story? And then the next person. And out of, like, you know, 20, 25 people, at least half the room all of a sudden started talking about spoons.
Okay, now you have to tell our listeners about the spoons.
But, you know, in that situation, here I am, and I almost felt like, do I come out? Do I say that I'm the person who wrote it? You know, and it was so utterly amazing.
Right.
It really, it has blown my mind that people have asked me to translate into different languages or different illnesses. Like, I thought this was a lupus thing. And then fibromyalgia people said to me, you know, no, I identify. And then people with MS, and then all of a sudden people with asthma, diabetes, any invisible illness,
mm-hmm.
and anyone having to ration their energy. And
right.
In more recent years, many, many cancer patients who were dealing, you know, with treatments have expressed their connection to the story.
Yes.
So the Spoon Theory is a real story, and it's about when me and a friend of mine were in the diner, and we were just talking, and she had been my best friend for a while, and what happened was she kind of looked at me with this weird look that I think most people who are dealing with any kind of illness know, that look of, it's not pity, it's not curiosity, it's kind of scared, it's somewhere
mm-hmm.
in the
yes.
middle.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of said, you know, what is it like to live with lupus? And I kind of did not know how to answer, because she knew about pills, she knew about doctor's visits, she knew about all those types of things. So when she asked me, I was like, what is she looking for? You know? And she kind of said, you know, what is it like to live with something and know it, like, every day? So I actually grabbed spoons off mm-hmm. of all the tables, and everyone thought I was crazy at the time, but, you know, I'll be a little crazy if it helps.
Sure.
And I handed them to her, and I said, here, you know, you have lupus. Congratulations. And I said to her, you know, think about it this way. I go, people who are healthy live a life with the luxury of a life without thought.
Right.
hey, what do you want to do today? Just jump into the car and go, you know. And people who are dealing with a disease or a sickness, an illness, they have to think about their choices.
Mm-hmm.
So I made her start her day, and I took away a spoon for getting up. And she was like, hey, how'd that happen? Wait a minute. And I said, well, no, you getting up is hard.
Right.
You didn't sleep well. You're waking up achy.
Mm-hmm.
You're waking up with the weight of the world because you probably woke up late.
Yes.
If you didn't wake up late, you still know that everything you have to do today is going to take effort. I took away a spoon. And then I made little jokes like, what are you wearing? And she said, I don't know. And I said, no. Because maybe you got blood taken and you have black and blues all over your arms.
Right.
You know, I go, now you have to wear a long sleeve shirt. Maybe your hands hurt and you can't handle buttons, so you need something that's more of a pullover. And I said to her, I go, you know, are you wearing a hat? Are you covering your head? Do you have hair today? You know, and I said, do you look pale? Do you have flushed cheeks? I go, all these things are things you probably are going to think about. So I took away another spoon. And as the day progressed, you could read the whole story online, but as
right.
the day progressed, you know, it was nighttime and she was left with one spoon. Whether it was going to work, whether it was, you know, walking to her car or whatever the day might be. And it was nighttime and she only had one spoon left. And I said, well, you haven't eaten dinner. If you cook, you're not going to have enough spoons to clean up. If you, you know, don't cook and just eat something simply, I go, then you have to take your medicine and then you still have to get up there to bed. I go, you might be too nauseous to even eat it.
Right.
And I said, and even then, I said, you're probably eating to stay healthy, not eating just because something tastes good.
Right.
And in the end, I said to her, I go, you know, what are you going to do? And she said, well, I guess I can only just go to bed. And she said, but that's crazy. You can't just go to bed because you're too exhausted to eat. And I said, well, yeah, you can.
Yeah, you can.
And we talked about rationing your day and rationing mm-hmm. energy and knowing the answers to certain choices you make. If I do this, you know, how will this affect the rest of my day? How will this affect my body or my health? And so then I shared with her and I said, I gave her an extra spoon at the very end because she seemed so sad realizing that I've been making these choices all along and she just never thought about it.
Right.
And I said to her, here, I always keep an extra spoon. So just spending my time here with you, I've given you a spoon. And I gave it to her. And see, I could cry because
I know, that's right.
I felt like I was giving her my time and my energy and my thought. And
right.
even being there, my, you know, the physicality of sitting in that chair. And she just never realized it. And when I saw her face that she actually got it, it was as if the skies opened. Because finally, I had a language that someone else understood, as silly as it is with spoons.
Right.
But now, at least on some level, they got it. And slowly, first that article was published, you know, in my college newsletter and then a lupus newsletter. And slowly it started to catch on like wildfire. And, I mean, I've had doctors say, how are the spoons today? And my mom will call and say, how are you feeling? And sometimes I'm being like, Mom, I have 52 spoons. Today's a great day, you know. And sometimes I'll be like, you know, we're dealing with one spoon. Can you come over and take care of the baby?
Right.
And those are sadder days, but at least she gets it. There's no question. There's no, oh, what hurts? Oh, what's going on? Is there anything I can do? Because I laughed one time and said to my mom, don't say that, because you can't take this away.
Right.
You know, you don't have a magic wand. So I needed a language that was less vulgar than some of the medication, oh, I'm throwing up. Well, I don't want
right.
to say that all the time, you know. And finally, spoons gave me this language of there is less chit-chat and more love.
Right. That makes sense.
Less details and more just true conversation. And
because I think when you start talking about, oh, you know, I'm on this medication and it's making me ill, people's eyes either they'll have that look like we were talking about, oh, poor you, or they'll just start to glaze over, think, I really didn't want to know this.
Right.
I just wanted you to say that you were fine, and then, you know, let's move
exactly.
on.
Exactly. You know, and I feel like, too, sometimes it's just too much info.
Right.
And then you kind of, the person gets overwhelmed mm-hmm. or doesn't know, and you stop being a person. I mean, I love that my friends and my family that have read the story, now we can talk about, oh, the next Twilight movie's coming out in June.
Right.
You can move on to normal friendship conversations. And the fact is, although we are dealing with our particular diseases, they're not who we are.
Right, exactly.
So, yes, I know you want to know how I feel, and I want to tell you how I feel, because that's going to affect if I'm tired, if I'm mopey, if I have chemo head, I'm foggy.
Right.
If, you know, it's going to affect my life with you, but it's not my life.
Exactly.
And I felt like it was almost like the shortcut. You know, this is how I feel. But now we can move on. And now you can understand that every choice I made that you didn't realize before has to be almost calculated.
Right. Now, you just talked about chemo, which is I didn't know that some forms of lupus are treated with chemo. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. I will admit that before I even speak, mm-hmm. I am a patient. I am not a doctor.
Right. We always say that. Never listen to me for medical advice because I'm on the radio and I don't have a medical degree.
Yes. And, well, what happens is that, you know, there's, of course, a whole level of medications. And, of course,
right.
doctors try to start with the lowest. And some of the typical medications are usually, you know, a drug called prednisone mm-hmm. or Plaquenil. And that's pretty common. I would say that most lupus patients have been on prednisone at one point in their lives or another. And that's what's hard, too, because those drugs many times cause other issues, as we all know.
Yes.
And for me, what happened in, I would say, about November is of this year, I had never been on a chemotherapeutic before.
Therapeutic, sorry.
they do consider two drugs that I had been on in the past is Imuran and methotrexate.
Mm-hmm.
And those all are considered in the chemotherapeutic, I hate that word, but mm-hmm. family.
Right.
But it's not really a chemo.
Okay.
But, you know, as we know and love.
Yes.
But what happened in this year is that they actually tried absolutely everything. And because I am 32 and had been on medications for so long, I was pretty drug resistant.
Mm.
And unfortunately, I was getting sicker and sicker. And in my case, because it was central nervous system involvement,
right.
I actually was losing feeling in my legs.
Oh,
and
wow.
I actually was bedbound and in a wheelchair. Before we knew it, it went from me not feeling my feet to me not feeling my legs very quickly.
Wow.
Yeah, it was very scary.
That's scary.
And it's an unusual, you know, I was, you know, one of those lovely rare cases, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they did try every other treatment. And then finally, the situations where people would be on Cytoxan,
mm-hmm.
which is a chemotherapy.
I was on it, yes.
And usually it's for kidney involvement when they are trying to stop
for lupus.
Mm-hmm. The lupus. And or in my situation, it was used in my case. And we really tried everything else. I remember having a conversation with the oncology nurse because she had to give me all this paperwork. Yes, I'm aware this could affect my fertility.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm aware that in the future this could cause bladder cancer. Yes, I'm aware. And I just remember reading this whole list and just...
Freaking out.
And yet I'm checking it because I don't have legs.
And
you know, but my legs, the feeling in my legs and my ability was gone. And the choice, like, you know, what are my choices? And I think
what cancer patients have the same thing. Like, I always joke about when the doctors say, well, this is your list of side effects. And I always call it like a menu or the wine list. It's like,
yes.
Well, no, thank you. I'd rather not have any of those. Or can I pick the ones that I
exactly.
get?
Exactly.
Because I'd rather not be nauseous, but, you know.
Exactly. And that's why it's so funny how, as of lately, some of my friends who've dealt with cancer,
mm-hmm.
They've become somewhat of my support group because as of lately, those are the symptoms I'm dealing with.
Right.
In fact, I went to a class at the hospital, one of those look good, feel better.
Right, the American Cancer Society put those on.
And they actually let me in. I felt like I was, being let into the club because what happened was is the director said to me, well, wait a minute, you might not have the same disease, but what we're talking about is the chemo. We're talking about the treatment,
right,
which is the same in this case. And, you know, I said, we thought about it. We waited a few days. I prayed on it.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to doctors. I talked to friends. I looked up to the almighty Google. You know, I did everything possible. And the fact still remained that I'd rather be a healthy mom of one,
right,
than a potentially disabled mom of two.
Exactly.
And that's really what it came down to. And yes, I actually said to one of the doctors, because it wasn't guaranteed, nothing's guaranteed.
Of course.
And I said to one of the doctors, I understand that it's a little bit of a gamble, but if I don't gamble, I have nothing. And if I do gamble, the worst case, I have nothing. So I'm taking the gamble, I'm taking the risk.
And I think that's the hardest thing, as probably with lupus, it is with cancer. You could have the same kind of thing that another person with lupus is dealing with, but the Cytoxan could treat you totally different.
Exactly.
And that's the thing I think that drives every survivor, every cancer patient nuts, because, I could go into it and I really didn't have nausea except for the first day that I didn't take the meds right. I was tired all the time. Like, that's why one of the reasons why, when I read your story and stuff, I'm like, wow, this sounds exactly like my cancer experience. And it just drives all of us crazy because it doesn't affect everyone the same.
Exactly. I mean, I thought I was a rock star and I was like, I don't need Zofran. I'm going to be fine. I don't get nauseous.
Yeah. Zofran is your friend.
Last words, and mm-hmm. I was begging for Zofran. And, when they tell you to drink a lot of water, mm-hmm. per se, I drank like a cup and I was like, all right, well, how much fluid do you need?
Holy crap, I was so sick of water after a while because my fiancé was the same way. He's like, I don't want you to get bladder cancer. Here, drink. And I'm just like, I'm going to be on the, I'm going to be on the bathroom all the time peeing.
Exactly.
But you
and
have to flush.
In my case, I couldn't get to the bathroom. I'm in a wheelchair. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm going to pee my pants,
Right.
And these are the stories that after you do laugh about,
Right.
But it was very hard to knowingly walk into what I say is like the fire.
Right.
I was knowingly walking into it, knowing I was going to get burned, but hoping on the other side there was something better.
But like you said, what other choice did you have?
Exactly. And I've known people where the Cytoxan worked amazing, mm-hmm. but that was for kidney involvement.
Right.
I know people where it didn't work well. And, I also knew that I was going into the holidays because this was around November.
Mm-hmm.
And all I kept thinking is, my daughter's not going to have a Christmas. And
right.
I know that shouldn't matter. facing lupus attacking my body, I shouldn't be thinking of Christmas.
Well, for your kids, I think you should.
But for your kids or just for your family or just mm-hmm. for your life, it's amazing the things that all of a sudden come up.
Right.
But in my head, I kept thinking, I'm going to be on chemo. How am I going to be around family and friends and parties and, mm-hmm. Getting a Christmas tree, all these things
right.
that I knew if I was on this medicine was not the right choice. And this year we had the small Christmas. And you know what? There are many times that I really do say that through the spoon theory, it's amazing how it was written about lupus, but
yes.
now when I was doing the chemo, it, mm-hmm. it definitely still related. Because I remember going to, a meeting with friends and a bunch of my friends wore the face masks. And it was when I walked into the room so that I wouldn't feel uncomfortable.
The face masks?
Yeah, like a face mask to help germs not get...
Oh, I see. Okay.
That kind of face mask.
Okay, and the surgical mask, right.
Yeah, and a bunch of my friends would now all carry Purell.
Very nice,
and
yes.
These little tokens of friendship that they might have thought was either cute or funny or...
Mm-hmm.
But made my world.
Right.
Because, okay, they get it, at least on some level. You always say they never really get it. But
well, yeah.
But I felt like, okay, and you know, and I also knew somewhere deep inside, I knew this was temporary.
Right.
I mean, I actually had to shave my head at one point, and because it just, my hair was falling out ridiculously.
Right, and I always tell people, you know, I didn't listen to the nurse when she said, you should cut your hair short or shave your head because your hair is going to fall out. And I'm like, that's not going to be me and, you know, like you in the shower. I still think about it and it's very traumatic. So, you know, when they say your hair is going to fall out, chances are it will. I only know of one person whose hair didn't fall out and he was a guy. So,
And if not, it's going to thin tremendously.
Right.
So, you know, and I felt like I was just, in my case, I had lost so much. And I remember just deciding to shave it. And It's hysterical because my husband is already bald. So he helped me. And it actually was such a sense of empowerment because
I was deciding,
all right, I'm taking over.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the same thing with my experience in the hospital only a few months ago, which blows my mind right now because I am healthy and I'm done with treatments.
And the chemo helped you?
Yes, I'm actually walking around as I speak to you. It's amazing. I mean, it really was, looking back, the best thing that I did. I actually feel better than I did before this incident. And, you know, again, that's my situation, my story. But it did. And I look back, though, and I really took control in so many aspects of this experience that looking back really, really defined what happened to me. Because, you know, in the beginning, deciding to make the choice to go on the chemo.
Right.
I mean, I had a doctor who was so concerned about my eggs, my ovaries.
Right.
And I remember, and this is a doctor, I have to say, I've seen for like 14 years throughout my lupus life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he was almost too connected. He knew me so well.
Right.
I grew up with him. That at one point I had to say, you know, you're caring more about my eggs than I am. Put me on the chemo, you know? And I did have to do that. And again, that was a time where I was empowered. And choosing to shave my head.
Right.
Again, a time where I took control. I did not want any more hair on the couch, on my pillow, you know, pulling out of the drain, the sink drain, you know, the shower drain. And, you know, other times, too, when I had to go back to physical rehab to kind of get my legs working again, you know, here I am in the hospital for 2-3 weeks. And
wow.
It could have been me sitting there miserable, and it was for 2 days, I won't lie.
Right.
We're all allowed to be upset or depressed for 2 days.
Exactly.
But then finally, you know, my daughter would come visit, and she kept coloring me pictures, and I ended up taping them all over the wall. And I decided, well, if I'm going to be here and have to be in pajamas, then I'm going to wear the cutest pajamas you've ever seen. And I decided I was going to wear a new pair of pajamas every day.
That's awesome.
And I told people if they were going to buy me a gift, I didn't want flowers because they die, buy me new pajamas.
That's funny.
And I was wearing pajamas with frogs, and I was wearing leopard pajamas. And you know what? Even those silly things really do help because it does, again, put you in control and gives you a kind of a sense of humor.
Exactly. And your sense of humor, I love. I think I found you, I don't know, on Facebook somewhere because, as everyone knows, I'm a Facebook junkie. I love the website, butyoudon'tlooksick.com.
Exactly.
Because that's cancer as well. I mean, when I was going through treatment, it's the wintertime. I live in northern Michigan. And, you know, luckily it was wintertime, so I could wear winter hats and people didn't know. And I lost weight, so it just looked like I had been working out. You know, and people are like, well, you don't look that bad. You don't look sick. And I'm like, well.
And, you know, when I was younger and dancing, I was a model, too. And what's so funny is even now, you know, after everything, even like last night when I was with friends, people have said to me, oh, you look so good. You've lost a bunch of weight. And I'm laughing in my head going, ooh, the chemo diet.
You know? Yeah, exactly.
And like, you know what? I've learned just to say thanks because really, what are you going to say?
Well, I kind of shock people because, you know, I love your positive attitude. And with me as well, I tell people, you know, I've had mostly a positive attitude throughout all this. And I always say that cancer was the best diet I ever had. And people would be shocked. And I'm like, well, you know, I wouldn't recommend it for anyone.
Exactly.
But
if you don't laugh, what are you going to do?
Exactly.
Even on one of the other articles on our site that's so funny because I actually had people participate, is I said, you know, what are the best answers to, but you don't look sick.
Right.
And someone wrote, well, but you don't look stupid. Or, oh, great, then I'm doing the right thing. Or, you know, and people kept writing to me like their answer to that.
Right.
You know, but you don't see me on the inside, you know. And we would laugh about it. And that became, you know, great. And, you know, I actually, when I've spoken for lupus events, lupus awareness, I've had people ask me, well, you know, why am I involved? As if I'm involved for someone else, like in my family, or
right. That
I had some other connection. And when I said to them, I have lupus, they were shocked. And I said to them, I said, well, what would you like me to do?
Right.
Do you want me to not put on blush so I look pale? Do you want me to, you know, show you my butterfly rash and not cover it up? Because I'll do that.
Right.
If you really want me to.
And like you said, the other thing with me is I'm all about different kinds of, you know, finding out about different kinds of cancer warriors, survivors, whatever, and people like yourself. It's not just for me breast cancer, because there's so many different cancers out there that are rare. And,
yeah. You
know, just in my lifetime, I was talking to someone. I don't care what cancer is cured. I would just love to have at least one cured in my lifetime.
Exactly.
You know, or lupus or something, you know.
You know, you commented on one of, again, I'm a Facebook addict too. And you commented on one of my posts where I said, I would gladly take my life with lupus if that meant that someone else won't have to.
Right.
And I really do mean that. If I can fight for fundraising, and if I can be philanthropic and, you know, raise money for my local lupus walk, and if I can spread awareness online and through my website as much as I can, if I can do my part, I always think of it as then someone else either might get diagnosed sooner,
right.
You know, and not go through the years of misdiagnosis like I did. Then I try to think bigger and say, you know, will there be a drug in my lifetime
yes. That
will make a difference? You know, there actually isn't a drug specifically for lupus. We have to take drugs from other ailments and other diseases.
Mm-hmm.
And there's talk, hallelujah, there's talk of some new lupus drugs coming down the pike.
I've heard of that, yeah. I was at a lupus walk meeting a couple of weeks ago, so.
Yeah, and do you know what I said? I said to one of my friends, I said, you know what? If it comes through and gets approved, that's amazing.
Yes.
Beyond words. I said, but you know what? If it doesn't, I'm still happy. And she looked
right.
at me and she was like, what, are you crazy? And I said, you know what? This means that some scientist somewhere and some people who give money somewhere and some pharmaceutical companies,
right.
you know, somewhere, thought about lupus for a few years and focused solely on a possibility of a new drug.
Right.
And I kind of felt like that happened in my lifetime. So if that happened now, what can the future bring?
Right. And, you know, and I feel in some way like you would be part of that, even if it's just a minute speck of that. You know, someone might have come across your blog or your website or even someone that you have talked to about lupus, and they might have said, oh, maybe I have this idea.
Right.
You know, because I believe your website is probably like mine. I get a lot of hits, and I don't know of everyone that I've helped, you know, because people have told me, it's like, oh, I had no idea that like insomnia was a side effect of chemo or this, that, and the other thing. And I hear like things off the periphery, but I'm sure your website helps a lot more people than you realize.
I can only imagine. I would say like about a year or two ago,
mm-hmm.
I was contacted by an advertiser for my site, and I was like, why would you want an advertiser? What do you want me? You know? And it was very funny when he started to give me stats about myself
right.
and about my site that I really didn't know, genuinely. And one time he said to me, well, you do know that you're the number one patient, lupus patient blog on the internet. And
wow,
I was like,
that's awesome.
I was like, really? You know, little old me.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep joking sometimes because I had no idea, and that blew my mind. And when I got contacted, you know, from people, even from other countries, like,
right.
it is overwhelming. And I have such gratitude for people who write to me and tell me that, because then that inspires me to write more.
Right.
You know, I think people don't realize that when you do send a thank you or a comment or some feedback, how much that does for me, because it's almost like I write down pieces of my soul,
right,
and I put it out there, but you kind of don't know what happens once it's out there. It's almost like, you know, I put a letter in a bottle and sent it out to the ocean, and
right.
I have no idea where it's going to go. So when you do get that feedback and you do start to see, oh, my God, I'm getting thousands of hits. I'm getting millions of hits.
Right.
Okay, oh, my goodness. People are hearing me, you know, and it really, I'm grateful beyond words.
Yes. So if people want to get a hold of you, how can they get a hold of you?
They can come to butyoudontlooksick.com.
Okay.
If that's way too long to remember for chemo brains like myself, you can just go to bydls.com.
Oh, S as in Sam. Okay.
And if you're interested in reading The Spoon Theory, you actually can go there to thespoontheory.com.
Oh, awesome.
So any one of those will lead you to my site. And please come. Please don't think it's just a lupus site or just a fibromyalgia site or what have you, because it has now been opened up to anyone living with any kind of invisible illness, because you don't look sick.
Right.
You know, is something we've all heard. And the support that's there, the information that's there, the humor that's there, it's my own. If I do anything in this life but make someone smile or make someone understand someone else a little bit more, then I've done my job.
Yes, exactly. Awesome. Well, thank you, Christine. Thank you for joining us on the Cancer War today. I am going to wrap up like I usually do. This is Mel Majoros. I am the Cancer Warrior. I am a Facebook junkie. You can always find me on Facebook, Mel Majoros. You can become a fan of the show on Facebook or like or whatever they're going to call it this week. The Cancer Warrior on EmpowerRadio.com. Check out my blog, thecancerwarrior.blogspot.com. And you know what? Life looks pretty good from where I'm sitting. Sending you good vibes. It's The Cancer Warrior on EmpowerRadio.com.